CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Voter Stephen Ben Jarofsky Show, as I speak, it is Sunday, May 5th, a very rare Sunday recording. A long story as to why we're recording it Sunday. I won't bore you with the details. I'll just tell you this. I have two distinguished gifted guests waiting to talk. They got a lot to say about a very important issue that I know nothing about. And people go, damn, Ben, how can you do a podcast of something you don't know anything about? Oh, you try doing a podcast like you know everything in the world. Every now and then you have to do a podcast of something you know nothing about. I do know about this. I've seen a lot of phony and frauds in politics in my life. But Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, what a trip. We'll be taking a deeper dive later this week. I'm bringing on Jeff Jenkins, who is a dog trainer. We're going to be talking about Governor Noem's killing of her dog. We'll get into that deep dive. So Kristi Noem, ladies and gentlemen, is the MAGA governor of South Dakota, who is trying to out MAGA all the other MAGA governors and senators in the country to win Donald Trump's love and be selected by Donald Trump to be his vice presidential candidate. So in order to be Donald Trump's candidate, you got to go complete and total MAGA. And in doing so, she wrote a book in which she admitted that she shot her dog, her family, a puppy, one bullet to the brain. And we'll get into that on Wednesday. She also followed up with a story about how she met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. And the whole point of the story is that she is prepared for the to deal with all the pressures and challenges of being vice president. Here's the exact quote. I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. But I'd been a children's pastor after all. So it's kind of like a joke. OK, so like she's saying that dealing with children is like dealing with the tyrant of North Korea. Well, it turns out that she never met Kim Jong-un. I don't think she's ever been to North Korea. It's total fabrication. She was on Face the Nation today and she was confronted by it. And rather than say, yes, I made the whole thing up, she kind of blamed it on, it's sort of like a Charles Barkley moment. If you remember, Charles Barkley wrote an autobiography in the 90s and he claimed he was misquoted in his autobiography. So apparently he hadn't read the autobiography until it came out and people were really astounded by something he said. And he goes, I never said that. I was misquoted. What's your autobiography? So what she said was that she's going to, she didn't admit that she made it up. She simply said, we're going to do a re-edit of the book and we're going to take the passage out, which is, and so then the follow-up question is, well, did you ever meet with him at all? Did you ever have an exchange with him at all? She said, well, it's inappropriate for me to talk about what I say with world leaders, which is kind of funny because the whole point of the anecdote is pointing out how tough she was on Kim Jong-un. Anyway, that's in the MAGA world, ladies and gentlemen. That's what it takes to be Donald Trump's running mate. All right, we're going to move out of the MAGA world for a while, talk about something, like I said, I know nothing about. My two guests, my distinguished guests, know a lot about this, and I'm looking forward to this conversation because I've been asking pretty much everybody I know who knows something about this questions about this. And so I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself. We're going to start off with distinguished guest whose first initial is R.
My name is Rachel Jarofsky. I am the youngest daughter of Ben Jarofsky, the muckraker of the Chicago Reader and the Benny J Show, which you all are listening to right now. Great to be here. Great to be here.
All right. And a stand-up comic in LA. Other distinguished guest with the first letter of C, introduce yourself.
Hello. Hello. My name is Cody Wilkins. I am a LA-based writer and occasional joker and a real casual hip hop listener whose favorite button is repeat.
Very good. Also a stand-up comic from time to time. So it'll be a lot of jokes if all goes well. So I'm here to discuss Kendrick Lamar's feud with Drake that has been the talk of the land. And we'll start with Cody. But Cody, I'm going to do this brief introduction. And one of my favorite topics is how the world is segmented into different divisions who know nothing about what's going on in the other division. I would know nothing about this feud whatsoever if not for the fact that on my Instagram feed, I follow the Chicago Sky WNBA team. And out of nowhere, I think it was on Thursday, I want to say, Cody, there was a segment they dropped on their Instagram page where they asked various Sky players whose side were they on. They just said Kendrick or Drake. I don't know what they were talking about. I have heard of both Kendrick Lamar and Drake, Cody, but I had, like, where was this coming from? So I took a mini deep dive and I discovered this had been going on for quite a while. I did not know anything about it. I probably would never know anything about it. It has not appeared in any of the old fogey newspapers that I read, although it probably will creep in. So it just underscores, Cody, how this world gets its information. This topic has been discussed, analyzed, reviewed, argued over by millions and millions of people, okay, who live in one segment of the world. And there's another segment of the world that's completely and utterly oblivious to it. And I wouldn't, in my case, as a member of that world, I wouldn't have known about it. If it wasn't for the Chicago Sky, so thank you, Sky. And I probably would have learned about it eventually when the New York Times or the Sun Times or the Tribune or whatever got around to mentioning it. So, all right, why don't you get the ball rolling, Cody? Just give a little backdrop of what's at the heart here. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying I'm not even on the internet. I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook. I found out about this via a large group chat, which I think is the most important part of this is the discussion around it, because that's what this feud is driving. It is capturing attention, and it is creating some phenomenal music. But ultimately, so far as I understand, many weeks ago, Drake and J. Cole, two of what are generally considered the top three MCs of the current generation, collaborated on a track called First Person Shooter, where somehow they each claim to be the best rapper and also made note of this big three, Drake, Kendrick, and J. Cole. And, you know, when I heard it, I just liked the song. It didn't feel like any shots were taken, no shots were fired. But then later, sometime later, Kendrick Lamar features on a song with someone and called Like That, where he addresses this concept of the big three and says, you know, ostensibly forget the big three. It's just big me. He snatches the crown and says, nah, it's just me. And I've always found that really funny because every single rapper has many a bar about how they are the best rapper alive. There, if you just type in best rapper alive, the first hit you'll get is a popular Lil Wayne song. But literally, it's a prerequisite to be a rapper is you must believe and they claim that you are the best. So it doesn't feel like a misstep for me to Kendrick come, for him to come and say, look, I hear you, but also I am the best. But that, you know, triggered some folks, the first person shooters, if one will. And J. Cole came back with two tracks on a mixtape, one called Pie and another called 7 Minute Drill, where he took aim directly at Kendrick Lamar. And 7 Minute Drill especially, I heard, has some spice on it. And people were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This looks like a little scuffle. Who's throwing the next punch? And Kendrick sat quietly. And I remember thinking, Drake, J. Cole, you guys are great at what you do. Drake can make a bop at the drop of a hat, and J. Cole's vicious with a pen, but Kendrick Lamar is a Pulitzer Prize winning, like, writer and rapper. So I think you might be barking up the wrong tree here. Kendrick didn't say much. And then J. Cole goes out at a concert and says, hey guys, I just wanna say, I know I made those songs where I was talking a lot of junk, but this doesn't feel right in my heart. Something about this doesn't feel right. I'm about to take 7 Minute Drill off the internet and just excuse myself from this. I've gone too far. I am a pacifist, a rap pacifist. And everyone was like, oh, J. Cole, you soft, man. That's crazy. How you gonna start a beat? You gonna throw a punch and you're gonna back out. You're not even really gonna play buddy a swing back. What's going on? And then Drake stepped up and started throwing a shot. The song Push Ups. He drops a track, and Drake is good for this. Drake will drop a diss track. He'll like write two, record two, drop the first one, and then immediately drop the second one. The whole second one will be like, you ain't got no bars yet? Where the comeback at? You ain't said nothing yet. You just sitting over there waiting. What you doing? So he did a double of that, one of which I think crossed the line of disrespect. He used AI to recreate the voice of Tupac and the voice of still living and breathing rapper Snoop Dogg to address Kendrick Lamar, essentially being like, hey man, I'm Tupac and this is Tupac and Snoop Dogg, and we, like we said, you were the best in the West these days, but this guy from Canada is just beating you up and you haven't said anything. Third verse, Drake comes in and starts smacking people around again. Bah, 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 bah. And it's like, wow, this is getting out of hand. And then Kendrick Lamar does what he does best. He came out of the woodwork with, I forget the order of these, but since Drake came out, there have been a lot of back-backs, forth and forths. And Kendrick, I believe in total, has dropped 3 songs to Drake's 2. Or 4 songs to Drake's 2. And each one from each respective party has been better than the last. I think Kendrick came out with maybe 616 in LA. Drake shot back with something else, I forget, because Kendrick has been, in my opinion, burying this man. Euphoria. And then Drake came back with either way, there's been a lot of back and forth and a lot of lines have been crossed. Family members have been mentioned. Dirt has been dug up. Drake has been accused of being a pedophile. Kendrick Lamar has been accused of abusing his wife. Drake's been accused of hiding a separate child. Kendrick Lamar has been accused of raising someone else's baby. Like, I wasn't old enough to understand Pac and Biggie. And that led to death. Most popular beefs since then, in my opinion, have been like probably meant to drum up media and attention and money. This feels like two people now, because with J. Cole out of the picture, this feels like two people who genuinely hate each other. And while it's sad to see, it is phenomenal to listen to, because the hatred is generating some amazing content and also some amazing conversation. And like, I think they're both big enough that no one's going to die on this front. Like, Drake might, you know what I'm saying? If there comes some facts behind some of these accusations, yeah, you know. But Diddy just got dropped, you know what I'm saying, got caught up. Like, hip-hop can only take so many L's at once. But that's kind of my layman's umbrella explanation for those who need to be caught up. And the internet could catch you up anywhere else.
Oh, that was well done. You don't even have to go on the internet. Just listen to that. Rach, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, Cody basically summed it up. perfectly. This is a real, this has been an exciting few weeks for me. I've sort of been glued to the beef. I texted this to Cody and you, Dad, that I haven't been listening to this much music on YouTube since 2009. Okay. Like that's the other part. It's such millennial core. Like all this music is coming out on YouTube. You have to go to YouTube to find the new tracks, which are eventually getting cleared and making it onto streaming. But like some of them haven't, like 616, Kendrick's drop 616 in LA and Meet the Grams are both not, are only, you can only find them on YouTube. I think that this could be, I will say Kendrick's winning. Kendrick is really, I don't really know, like, I'm like worried for Drake. And people are like, oh, Rachel, you love Drake. Like, I'm known to be a lover of Drake, but I have been distancing myself from him with the pedophile allegations, which I'll be honest, I believe. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, I believe it. Like, I just do. I believe it. And so it's like, how do you divest from a pedophile that makes great music? It's slow. It's arduous. It is like tearing. It's like tearing Velcro. Like, it's not easy to do. And so at the very least, I do, if this, as someone who does care about, who does, it's like, I like Drake, but he might need to get his ass whooped for the good of his character. And I will say that some of these tracks have been a real ass whooping, like Meet the Grams, which came out, let's see if I can do the order. So it went like that off the Metro, Kendrick's track off the Metro Boomin album. Then it went Push-Ups. And let's not forget that Rick Ross, say what you will about Rick Ross, but Rick Ross came in with a great diss track in the middle before Kendrick was off to the races. He came in with a great anti-Drake diss track after like that, because Rick Ross was also on the Metro Boomin album as well. And so he comes for Drake and, you know, calls him a white boy and like just releases like a very good bare bones kind of like diss track, stripped down beat, just truly coming for Drake, accuses him of getting a nose job so that he looks less black, all this stuff. So that was kind of that's just another track that for people who are listening, tap in, don't sleep on Rick Ross, my favorite cop. But anyways, so, you know, we had like that. And then finally Kendrick came back with, Drake came back with Push-Ups. And then his insane AI track, Tailor-Made Freestyle, which was just stupid. And that's the thing is like, I've also been hearing stuff about like, you know, this battle is kind of making Kendrick have to, it's turning Drake into a better rapper and making Kendrick have to drop more regularly. And that is something that you see because in the last, like, you know, 10 years or so, Kendrick hadn't dropped, or, you know, Kendrick dropped way fewer albums than Drake did. Drake, like Cody said, Drake is seen as like a music making machine. But the music that he's making is not always the best. But now we're seeing this switch where it's like, because of this beef, the music that Drake is putting out is being called better quality, like Family Matters, his latest diss track, was like, it was a good one for him. He leveled up after hearing, you know, Kendrick's seven bangers, not seven, but three, but it felt like seven because he went so hard. So anyways, it really is just, it's a magical week for hip hop. Is this Drake's demise? Maybe, but if you are a pedophile, like, you might have to get demised. You know what I mean? Like, and who doesn't love anti-pedophile music? I mean, that's something that America can really rally by.
I support that because, you know, you talk about what it takes to take down a pedophile. And if we look at the last one, it's approximately 25 years, one documentary and 14 trials plus P tapes. R. Kelly stood strong for a long time. It like, and you know what didn't happen? There was never an R. Kelly diss track. There was never an R. Kelly beef. So this is the remix to the remix to divestment right here. We're figuring out how to do it right this time.
It's
and Kendrick,
true.
As he always
and
does.
Cody, you heard Not For Us or Not Like Us.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Really good. Really, really, all of it is quite good. I think the thing that continues to just blow my mind is the way that it has gotten so personal. Like, it's not about anyone's rap capabilities. You know, it's not like you're not good at what you do. It's like you're actually a rotten person and your family hates you and you should. Like, this is therapy inspiring rap music for the people making it, which is.
Oh, okay.
It's true.
So I just have to interject something here as the old journalist in the room. So when I read. I actually read the lyrics. It's embarrassing. I'm like, did I miss something about a pedophilia accusation against Drake? So I then did a deep dive, started looking for accusations. And so, you know, when I think of, you were alluding to R. Kelly or Michael Jackson or Woody Allen, or you know, other prominent figures who've had accusations of pedophilia against them, there have been lawsuits, there have been articles, there have been prosecutions, there have been documentaries about it. I couldn't find anything specific about Drake. And I'm like, has this guy been wronged? I mean, just for the record, I have no horse in this race, so I'm not on either guy's side. Although having dipped into it, Cody and Rachel, there's no doubt in my mind that Kendrick Lamar is a far more brilliant words master than Drake could ever pretend to be. And this guy is really truly gifted poet. I'm like, is this unfair to Drake? So, I mean, do you know of something? Why this is even an allegation?
I think it all kind of started a couple of years ago, and then, and maybe still, I don't know if she's an adult yet, but then minor TV star Millie Bobby Brown of Stranger Things fame mentioned in a press junket that she and Drake were friends and had exchanged text messages, which people looked at with a side eye because he's in his 30s and she was a teenager. And then, you know, other than that, I don't know anything about any hard evidence, and I don't like to stick my nose in that kind of business. You know, it's just like, but I think there have been a lot of just generally negative attitudes towards Drake's, and I don't know how much of it is warranted, but he seems to have a lot of chameleon-esque fluidity through like genres of like hip hop and pop music and like the circles in which he runs. You know, he can make a song for the most part with anybody about anything. He does a lot of code switching. He puts on different accents. He kind of molds himself to fit whatever jar he needs to be in for the moment, and I get the sense that there's also big accusations about ghostwriters, like Drake not writing his own music, which it's so funny that that's an issue, because literally to be a songwriter is a career. Like, there are people who are paid to write songs for people all the time, but I think Drake claiming to be this phenomenal lyricist when in reality he's a bit more of a performer. So a performer in the booth, then a performer on stage, and maybe performing some illicit activities off stage, and all the things he does to try and make this product that is Drake sell, has made those closer to the pen and the page and the core of the hip hop world be like, all right, it's time to jump this man. And he is kind of getting lyrically jumped on. I forgot about the Rick Ross thing. I also forgot about the Future and Metro Boomin album, We Don't Trust You. Like, everyone has, I think it's the chorus the echoing chorus of voices that have come out like, this guy sucks, that makes it hard to not believe. And like folks who were...
Yeah, it's also like... Sorry.
No, that's it.
No, finish your thought, Cody.
Folks who have worked with him before, you know? It's the people he's been relatively close to all kind of turning their backs. And J. Cole, who stepped out to be a pacifist, not saying anything like, oh, come on, guys, come on now. He just said, I'm going to fall back.
I mean, Drake has been flying too close to the sun for a while, and like, he needs this. I'm sorry, but he needs to get knocked down a few notches. And like, it's also fun because it's like people, you know, Kendrick's last album, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, like, I loved it, but a lot of people felt that it was too, like, maybe like too emotional. And that's what, like, when J. Cole was still in the beef, like, he shat all over, in 7 Minute Drill, he shat all over the album and you know, just talking about how it was tragic and like a therapy session. And Drake has done a bunch of sneak disses at Kendrick about that. Like, oh, you're just like selling PTSD and you're not like really, your music is essentially like melodramatic and like real trauma dumpy. And so I think it has been fun to see, and I don't agree with that sentiment. Like, I can be here for like the therapy Kendrick Lamar sessions, but like, it has been fun to see him kind of get back on his, like, you know, petty tip, just coming for motherfuckers and like, you know, treating the fuck out of them. Like, I love to see Kendrick Lamar treat the fuck out of someone. Like, a song where he's like gloating a little bit or a little bit. I do love an ego moment from Kendrick, like Humble. I'm trying to think other songs that like are like that. I'm thinking off Good Kid, Mad City, DNA. You know what I mean? DNA. I feel like it's like, yes. So what did you think of Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, Cody?
You know, as a black man who goes to therapy, I really enjoyed I really enjoyed Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. I actually think that part of Drake's displeasure with Kendrick, and this is a thought born in my own mind, might be that he is able to be honest and successful. Like, honest and vulnerable and equally successful. Like, Drake, I think Scorpion or whatever, one of his albums recently had like 26 songs on it. And it was good. It wasn't great. There were some hits. There were some misses. But like, he puts out such a great volume. He's played in all the clubs and all the radios. Drake makes phenomenal music and he makes it at a high clip. And Kendrick is able, I would say Drake is like, if they were, you know, weapons, Drake is like a really nice big old machine gun, and Kendrick Lamar is a sniper. And it's got to be frustrating for Drake probably to put in so much time and so much effort, employ so many people, so many producers, so many writers, go on so many shows, and feel like you should be head and shoulders above everyone, but there's this guy who's just truly an artist who is stride for stride and arguably ahead of you. And it's like, you try and roast somebody and when you're 14 years old and you're like coming for their hat and their shirt and their girlfriend or lack thereof and their dirty shoes and you can't hoop, and then you're just saying all the things, and then they just come back and say, well, don't you sound like you miss your father, you know, like, just straight. That's what Kendrick has done here. He's gotten extremely surgical down to the core of the issue. And I feel like every rebuttal that Drake puts out, it feels like, man, that was a fantastic counterpunch. And then it's just surprised the way that Kendrick has done a combination of like jujitsu using Drake's weight against him, and also just like swinging back so precisely and powerfully that it's hard to root for Drake right now, even though he's still serving.
It was hard to root for Drake after All the Dogs, his last album. Like, he was truly so horrendous. His entire persona on that album, like, it's, I was like, this, it should be illegal for this man to have sex based on how he's speaking. You know what I mean? Like, it should be illegal for him to get his dick sucked. Like, that is, that was how I felt after listening to For All the Dogs. And I did listen. And I managed to even find corners of that album that I liked and listened to a lot because I like Drake's songs. I like his nostalgia. I like, you know, I can get into his like toxic. There's something familiar about his version of toxic masculinity that even I managed to see in myself sometimes. So like I, if anyone gets the appeal, it's me. But at the same time, you know, I'm more feminist than toxically masculine, if that makes sense. So it's like, I'm always going to end up like the hate in my heart for his fuckery is always going to sort of win out. But then I'll always listen to another album by him. Like the pedophilia claims would really, really have to crystallize for me to cut him out, especially after Kanye. It's like, I cut Kanye out. Like, all right, you're going to have to give me at least 15 years
or
some hard, a few people to come forward, some crystallized claims for me to also kind of throw in the towel.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right now it's just all kind of whispering in the back, and that the text to Millie Brown, you know, that's hardly hard.
And Billie Eilish. Eilish, who was also texting.
Famous people.
Who defended him. And was like, we can be, the people are so sensitive. But it's just like, it is strange that he texted Millie Bobby Brown, I miss you, when he was 31 and she was 14. That is weird.
All right. So, Cody, going back to something you said, I'd love for you to take a deeper dive on this. So you were getting at the concept of what's real and what's fake. And that seems to be the heart of Kendrick Lamar's accusations against Drake, that he's so fake, he's so fraudulent, he has so many different sides to himself, he doesn't even know who he is. And then he pretends like he's concerned about him, which is kind of passive aggressive, you know, really worry about you, you know, you need help. So why don't you go into that a little bit, the concept of what's fake and what's real in a world of performance. Remember, it's performance. And as you said, I'm going to steal your line because you haven't uttered it yet, so I'm going to steal it. But it was his line, so I'm not Robin Williams stealing his line. You said at the heart of this is two men writing poems about each other. So they're performers, they're entertainers. And they're poets or artists, what have you, but somehow one is real and the other's fake. Why don't you explore that a little bit?
Yeah. I just want to clear up one. That's not my line. That's a tweet I saw years ago. I wish I could tell you where from, but it's like it's something to the degree of like, at the end of the day, rap battles are just two grown men in a room writing poems about each other. That has stuck with me for so long. Because like, for instance, I'm a comedian, and there are comedy roasts. You take two comics, throw them up there, and it's a environment built to entertain people by tearing each other down in a comedic way that is visceral and raw and mean, but does not end in blows. And like sometimes the things these people say in roasts are insane, and like you say that in the street, and I'm gonna send it straight up style stuff, but like it is purposely and explicitly built for entertainment. And that is how I've looked at the manipulation of most public relationships, whether it's a romantic relationship between two stars or like manufactured tension or beef between two stars. It's for attention. This, though, again, feels different. Because, unless somebody's about to drop an album, unless somebody's about to go on tour, unless somebody's kid is going to private school and the mortgage is a little too high, I don't know why you're trying to drum up all this attention and all these sales for things that won't be played in the club, things that won't be played on the radio, things that aren't really supposed to be revenue generators. And also the content of what's being said seems so potently meaningful and angry and like genuinely hateful that I'm kind of lost on what's real here. And I would love to see them fight. I would love to see them fight. I'm just going to say it. Because as a listener, as long as nobody dies, I support this wholeheartedly. Keep fighting. Keep making awesome music. Keep pulling in the best producers and the best writers and the best mixers and masters to just give me something to drive to on the way home from work. So I feel like I can I feel like I'm cussing out my frustrations or whatever.
All right. So before I kick it over to Rachel, get her thoughts on that. I just wonder, when you say fight, do you actually mean like go put on boxing gloves?
I would like to see them go to fisticuffs. I want like a versus battle. I want them to put gloves on and mouth guards in, and I want them to square up in a boxing ring and fight each other.
That, by the way, so we do some boxing talk on this show. A shout out to Sergio Vicente. We did a whole show about, I don't know if you know about it, Elon Musk challenged Mark Zuckerberg to get in the ring with him. Actually, do what you just said. And then it turned out that Mark Zuckerberg was really into jiu-jitsu and is in great shape. And Elon Musk is this flabby guy. It's such a joke. And he completely dropped. I was just the way to go, okay, yeah. Let's see it. And then Mike Tyson, I don't know if you know this, is about to fight Logan Paul.
Logan Paul or Jake Paul, one of them.
Oh, one of the Paul brothers. I apologize if I got the wrong one. I thought it was Logan. It could be Jake. Yeah. And really, what difference does it make, Cody? But so that could, maybe this could be the on the card in that fight. All right, Rach, the concept. Before I get to ask you guys for your favorite riffs from this this fight and this battle, why don't you address the issue of fake versus real in the world of art? Go ahead.
I mean, it's like, how real is anyone, actually? I think that's Drake's entire, I guess, like Kendrick's, Kendrick wants to be brandless, but I guess his brand is more, if we had to give him a brand, it would be authenticity. And Drake is like a chameleon, which is part of why he is seen as so talented, is like he can do it all and he does it all so well. Like, you know, switching up his flow, adopting more of a drill style flow. Also like, doing Afro beats or rap singing in Spanish, which is all, when Drake speaking Spanish is one of the more classic experiences that he's provided fans through the years. But like, it's partly what makes him so laughable. I mean, it's both what makes him kind of a joke and also what is impressive about him at the same time. I think that like one thing that I did appreciate about Kendrick's bars, and this is off Euphoria, is he goes, he's got a one line that's like, I like Drake when he's singing songs. I don't like Drake when he's acting tough. And I agree with that. Like Drake is he's definitely not like, he's not a tough guy. Like, I guess the only way he could like double down on this narrative of being like a guy of the streets is that he's gotten so rich. I guess what he's presenting is that he's gotten so rich that like he's got so many people who want to come after him and his wealth that he's had to harden and like buy a gun, I guess, and like get a bunch of bodyguards who will like murder people for him and order people to be murdered and like get, you know, get mob ties for protection. I don't like, that's the most that I can make sense of his like tough guy side or even rationalize it. Whereas like, you know, but in reality, you know, before I switched to Kendrick, in reality, Drake grew up like pretty middle class, went to, you know, a Jewish day school in Toronto, like, you know, did have his own strife of like being of, you know, growing up to a single mother and being a child of divorce and yada, yada, yada. But it's just like, he's not like, I have a hard time. He was a child actor. I'm like, what are your actual mob ties? It's so confusing. Whereas like Kendrick, you know, he grew up in Section 8 housing. Like he's just like more of a validity to his, like, to him being a tough guy who's from and of and in touch with the streets. So I think that, like, you know, there's already, it's already an unlevel playing field in terms of like who's coming across as more real. I think the most that Drake can do at this point to like call in to delegitimize Kendrick is to be like, you're sort of moral high ground, you know, facade is a facade. Like you're not Jesus Christ, dude. Like you're actually, you've got skeletons in your closet, you know, you fuck white girls and you beat on your wife allegedly, and you're commodifying liberation, I guess. There are like narratives around liberation. I guess that's what Drake's got going for him, what he can say back to Kendrick. But again, if Drake is actually a pedophile, which he might be, then it's like, well, there's not many places that you can go from there. And to sum it all up, like, I do think Drake is just more slimy than Kendrick. Like, just the way he's moved in the last 15 years is just that. It's just more gross.
While you were on that riff, I was thinking about this, the whole thing, which I've never understood. And this could be a whole show, so I'm just going to throw it out there. The obsession that people have with establishing that they're tougher than they are, or that their upbringing was tougher than it was. And you see it all of us, lived in Chicago at one point or another, with the obsession people have with being from Chicago, which is one of the most interesting obsessions I've ever seen, because there's nothing wrong with being from the suburbs. And yet so many people are just afraid to say they're from the suburbs. They're ashamed to say from their suburbs. And so I've had conversations with people who are from the North Shore, and they sneer at the North Shore. And I said, I'm from the North Shore. What's the matter? Everybody wants to live in the North Shore. It's beautiful. You are from the North Shore. Why are you acting like you're not from the North Shore? So I hear you. This very weird obsession people have. They want to be tough, but then they don't want to live a tough life. I'm like, what? Don't get me started.
I think the last thing I think, and Rachel, you made me think of this, and you talked about like Drake's versatility. Like I agree with you. That's a phenomenal skill. That dynamic, to be that dynamic is awesome. And you talk about like commodifying liberation on the Kendrick side. That's what Drake's been like trying to accuse him of. And I think when we talk about what's real in all of this, what's real is Drake is really entertaining. His music is extremely entertaining. And that sort of entertainment provides a sense of liberation for the people who listen to it and enjoy it in private and in public, right? But whatever part of, whether it's tough Drake or soft Drake, party Drake or want to be violent Drake, Spanish Drake or drill Drake, like it's always entertaining. Kendrick, his discography, his music has always been energizing and uplifting, right? Like the narrative nature of his albums and the content that he talks about, like, it's more about where Drake has been entertaining. Kendrick has been empowering. And entertaining in his empowerment, but almost empowering first. And I think that's why, in my opinion, listening to this beef go back and forth, yeah, of course, first things first, I'm glad a handful of people like are making some money. I'm glad a bunch of people are entertained. But my frustration with Drake that makes me kind of side with Kendrick on this one is, bro, you're like a, my, like you asked what our favorite line was. And Kendrick was like, essentially said, it is cringeworthy and makes me uncomfortable when Drake, when you use the N-word. Like, Drake, we don't want to hear you say that anymore. And the extreme degrees to which Drake seems to code switch, being a half black Canadian who's come down here and capitalized on black culture in America and is now taking pot shots at Kendrick Lamar, what seemed like in an unsolicited way, at least initially, and now failing to keep up with the beef that he and J. Cole started. It's like, I can't help but laugh at you, bro. And like, I'm a Drake fan. My Spotify stats will tell you, but they will also tell you that since this beef started, some of the tracks that was just I had been skipped a little earlier. Cause he's getting his face crushed in, and it's funny.
All right. So before we get to favorite lines, I just have to ask each of you this. And this is something Cody said in the opening, and I wrote it down. The obsession almost to be the best. And I don't see that in comedy as much. Maybe I'm missing something. Do comedians talk this way? Like, I'm the best. I'm the best comedian. I don't know. Either one of you, Cody, is this something that you comedian sitting around a room trashing other comedians and saying I'm the best, and then getting on stage and trashing them?
I don't think bravado is funny. You know, like, so you can't really get up there and puff your chest out and be like, I'm the funniest motherfucker in the game. That sort of bravado is one of the things that now has made me feel a little less enthusiastic about Dave Chappelle. Like, there's a handful of things, but like, Dave Chappelle is hilarious, but the fact that he keeps saying that he's hilarious and the best, and instead of like showing it, like in comedy, you can't say it. You cannot say it. You have to show it. You have to exhibit that you are the best. And it's also so subjective, and like, nobody's clocking the top comedy charts. Nobody's talking about the Billboard 100, like Bill Burr's up there. You know what I mean? Like, oh man, Ali Wong's crushing the charts right now. That's not happening. So in comedy, it's, you got to put up or shut up. And if you shut up, you're not working. So you must just put up.
Yeah. It's also like, so much of comedy is like self-effacing and like making fun of yourself. So it's like, you can't really do both, you know, and that making people laugh at the expense of who you are does not go hand in hand with being like, I'm the motherfucking goat. You know, it's just a different energy.
Yeah, that's true. All right. I'll steer away from the latest thing in comedy, which is this obsession with like the 90s being so funny. I know people drop clips from the 90s. You can't do this anymore. I mean, just, it's so bizarre. This guy's the GOAT. And you can't insult people the way he's insulting people anymore. I see that so much on Instagram. Like, first of all, it wasn't that funny, okay? It wasn't that funny when he did it. It's not that funny now. And there's a lot of funny comedians out there in the world. All right, we'll close. Each of you, why don't you cite your favorite line, if you have one, from this exchange? I got a feeling that nobody's going to be citing Drake, because just as, again, a neutral observer, in my opinion, the floor has been mopped, okay? There is not even a contention here. He should just pull a J. Cole and apologize for even starting the whole thing. You go, my bad. You're really a great guy. There was this, I think it's the closing line, that, man, It was really good. And I can't even read it on my, oh, here we go. This is the closing line that kind of sums it up. Kendrick Lamar is just riffing about all the lies that Drake has told. He closes by saying, "You lied about the only artist that could offer you some help. Fuck a rap battle. This a long life battle with yourself."
Yes.
And that was pretty damn good. I'm like, whoa, I wish I'd thought of that. Who wants to go first? Either one of you. I got a favorite line, Cody. You look ready.
I got one. I don't know the line before, but the punchline is it's in Kendrick's Not Like Us. And he says, trying to strike a chord, and it's probably A minor.
Yeah.
Right. That one's because that's how he always sounds.
Which is just, I love a play on words. I love a double entendre. I love like a battle rap ass line. And that was a real battle rap line. That tickled my fancy. That's why the man is a Pulitzer Prize winner. You have to remember that he can do things on paper that like are globally recognized for being genius. So we got it.
Right.
It's true. It's true. Not Like Us is just like, it reminded me of so many songs off of, which album was that? The Black Panther album that Kendrick put out. It took me back to that album and like I started re-listening to that. But I think my favorite bars from all this, it's hard to pick, but I think it's off Euphoria, and it's just Kendrick's riff where he's like, that part where he's like, "But you know none about that. No, none about that." You know the part I'm talking about? I'm trying to find it right now, but it's like, it's so, it's that part, and then it's like about raising his son, but then it's also, I also love in that same song, the Crody riff where he's like, "Don't speak on the family, Crody. It can get deep in the family, Crody." And then he just talks about being at this Chinese restaurant eating fried rice and dip sauce. And it's just like, it's just really painting some pictures. He's painting some pictures. So those are my favorite. But I also, Drake did have a good bar on Family Matters where he's like, what was it? It's the part where he's like, he asks, I can't remember the bar and I can't find it, but it's like it's part of him accusing Kendrick of domestic abuse. And he poses a question basically like, is it still domestic abuse if your girl's bigger than you?
Yeah.
Or is it self-defense if your girl's bigger than you? Like, I do think he has some good, you know, making fun of Kendrick's height is sort of low-hanging fruit, but he does do it well. There are some moments where he does it well and it's funny. And I might get dragged for this, but like, I'm not gonna lie. I did laugh at the, you're rapping like you're trying to get the slaves free.
Slaves free.
It did make me laugh. Cause it's a little bit like, it's Drake telling Kendrick to get your big a little bit. Like, so, and I did laugh. And then of course, Kendrick doubled down and was like, see this, you know, this colonizer is calling us slaves. It did make me laugh that, and off of Push-Ups when Drake is like, "Metro, shut your dumb ass up and make some drums." Do you know what I'm talking about? Where he tells Metro Beats to just shut up and make drums.
Yeah.
I like that one. Shut up and make the drums. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So a lot of great moments, to kind of choose from there.
All right. Very good. We'll close there. Thank you both for coming on the show. And this, I believe, is the fifth time that Rachel and Cody have been in my humble little podcast. I urge everybody, if you like this conversation, go back in the library and check out the last ones, including the very first one they ever did when we had a studio before COVID. And it was a pretty conversation. These two, they didn't talk about this, have known each other since high school. They went to high school together. And I don't know if you guys remember that first conversation was in 2019. It's Funny stuff. I know.
And, 5 full years.
Jeez. The high school year. Well, no. Okay. You weren't in high school in 2008. Right. The conversation was in
2008. Right.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Cody. Thank you, Rachel. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.